I'm recycling an interview here I did with Ethan Getchell, who's a brand new social worker, still accumulating hours for his LCSW. He's under supervision in a hospital outpatient setting. I interviewed him for a piece on men's mental health because he's created this entire online presence that focuses on that topic. It became a passion for him after he lost his youngest brother to suicide. It was his senior year of college. And it's gained traction. People are noticing. He shares about his brother's suicide in a really vulnerable way on purpose. He thinks it's important to reach others who are struggling. And he knows that someday, if he enters private practice, this online presence will probably be the way he's generating his clientele. Like, his clients are going to know his story really well, which is kind of a new thing. He can't really ask others about what that'll be like. Here's some of our conversation.
That your mean client probably does know a lot about the trauma that you've experienced. Mm-hmm. Like, that maybe could add an additional layer of complication. I wonder, have you found that at all yet? Like, people, your clients want to, like, talk about your story or know more about your story?
I haven't.
Really?
It's still kind of a question mark for me. It's something that I bring up in supervision that I'm like, what if this happens? But because my supervisors really don't have that experience, they're not on social media, they don't have books about themselves, they're like, I don't really know what to tell you. And so it's something I haven't dealt with, but I think I have a lot of good mentors and supervisors around me that I'll be able to kind of talk with them if that does happen. I'm sure it will happen eventually, but hasn't yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking especially if you go into private practice and people are really like drawn to you as a clinician, like through your social media, it's that might be a conversation you kind of have to have with everybody. Maybe you'll kind of just develop an elevator.
Yeah, yeah. I think what it does require is my own self-care, which is a requirement of all therapists and people in this space. We all have our traumas and our lived experiences and the things that have happened to us. We all have to take care of them. Mine are more visible to the world, and it's a way that through vulnerability I can connect with people and get them in the door. But that doesn't mean it's a space where I can turn around and vent toward the clients that I have, or I can break down and recognizing like my strengths and weaknesses. It's still important to take care of myself, to do the therapy, to work on my mental health so that I can show up for the people that do come in the door.
My name is Tobin Richardson. I'm counselor educator with the vision to save the therapist by creating a forever free podcast style platform designed for learning. And here I'm exploring the ethics of social media influencing. And if you don't know what an influencer is, trust me, you're not alone, but let's start there. A social media influencer is a person who's built a large and active following on social media platforms who shares content, sometimes to educate others, sometimes just to entertain them or inspire them. And there's a subcategory of influencers who focus on the topic of mental health. And some of these people are clinicians, but many are not. And it would be hard to deny the impact they have. People are hearing what they have to say. And there's not an exact standard for what constitutes as an influencer. Specifically, there's not like an exact number of followers, which qualifies a person to add this to their resume. But sometimes you just know, like it's obvious. And one of those cases, in my opinion, exists with Dr. Ashley Elliott, who's a psychologist who also has what I consider to be a huge social media following. I found her on TikTok, where she has over 80,000 followers, and her content is just really interesting and real, and it's focused on mental health and therapy. So she's navigated the waters of mental health ethics related to influencing in real time and has a lot of interesting insight. Here's our conversation.
You're living something that a lot of people are really curious about. I mean, just like, well, I guess here's my first question for you. I think of you as TikTok famous. Do you think of yourself as like TikTok famous?
My friends do. I don't. I just think of myself as Ashley. I'm the exact same way online that you see in person. It's like, I know we all have different aspects or fragments or parts of ourselves, But this is just me. So I think they think it's like a character, and they meet me and they're like, oh shit. I'm like, yeah, I'm a normal person.
Do you think that's why you gained such an online following?
I honestly believe so. I always tell people transparency saves lives. So when you are your true self and your real self, people get that. And I think because I am my real self, I'm a human. I was a human before I was a clinician. I was a human before I was a writer. I was a human before I was a mom. So it's my, I feel like when we talk about content, especially when you come from an expert or a clinician role, people see you like, and like the angels come down in this great pedestal and you know everything. I don't. I went to school for a very long time to learn things that I would learn about things that I was interested in and things that I had an inkling. Like, okay, this is how this works. And I've had a lot of training in that. However, I'm still a human. And I don't believe that my humanness needs to take backseat to a title. So I think that's the best way. And being a little Black girl, I always know when it comes to representation, you want to see someone that you want the girl around the corner, the your best friend's big sister to explain something to you because you trust her. And she looks like you and she makes sense and she understands these things. So that's me. I think people say like, well, that's your stick. I'm like, I don't really think that's my stick. I think this is who I am. And also we live in a world, especially post pandemic, where a lot of people are trying to go to social media to get answers. And there are a lot of people who don't know what the hell they're talking about or are using anecdotal things to really generalize externally. And that's not helpful. So I feel like if I have the approach of being real, of being transparent, of being somebody you can talk to, that helps with the information that I'm coming from. You feel safe with me. Oh, and you know some stuff. So let's blend this. And that's my approach. And I often feel that from me looking at algorithms, because I'm a nerd, and looking at other people's profiles and doing the research that I've done over the years that I've been taking social media seriously for professional purposes, that's the thing. Either you want someone, most people gravitate towards people who are going to tell them what's real versus make them feel small. That's a different niche. That's Instagram aesthetic for you making me feel small because you're showing me all these beautiful, luxurious things you have and these things. But that's what it's created for. Things like TikTok and Twitch and YouTube are for conversations.
How much do you think about and like prepare the content that you post versus how much of it is just based on organically what's happening in your day-to-day life?
I think it's 80-20 organic. But as I've gotten to do more stuff and as my schedule has gotten crazy, I will write, like, I do have on a calendar, like, you have to put up content for today. But usually more of my planned content is like when I do partnerships with people, that's like structured. So they have these points they want me to hit. And I'm like, okay, so I need to put these on these days or whatever. There are certain months that I have things structured. Like, of course, the holidays. I do a lot of focus on self-care, speaking up for yourself, advocating for yourself, not being hard on yourself about goals or being around family or people who do not respect or love you. Pride, we're going to do all our pride stuff. Black History Month. I do things for different populations, but mostly some it'll be like a client will say something in session and I'll be like, huh, I wonder how many other people feel this way. Or my clients who know I have a social media presence, who a lot of them have found me because of social media, will go like, you should talk about that. Or sometimes it's just like last night I was sitting, I was about to record, and it didn't feel like it was right. Like what I said was right. All the things I was like, this isn't needed for this time. And I deleted it and I'm going to pick it up back tomorrow. Because I think the algorithm, I hate this word, but it's so real. The algorithm will trick you into just throwing stuff out. And that's not what it is. It's not helpful for me. I want things to resonate. I want things to make sense. Yeah, sometimes it'll come to me while I'm just like walking or talking. I'm like, ooh, and I'll just write something down and I just sit and record. And then, yeah, sometimes it's like, okay, these are the things that I want to talk about.
What's it like to get clients? Because you mentioned like a lot of your clients do know you from TikTok. What's that feel like? Like, is that ethically tricky when clients know your story and know you so well?
I think, and this is something that like APA 2023, me and my colleague, Dr. Kelly Dunlap, we presented on the ethical social media's use for TikTok, Twitch, and YouTube. And one of the things that it depends on what orientation you're coming from and also cultural factors. So going through school, I was kind of told like, you sit like this and you don't, you know, give your client your feedback on the face and you don't do that. And I was like, this does not feel right. And then I started meeting and started having more coursework with clinicians of color, specifically like a Black, African, Afghan, and like Latino professors, and they were like, that's all bullshit. And I remember for my internship, like, I can't have any pictures. I had just had a child, like literally before starting internship, and I had this newborn, and they were like, oh, you can't have pictures in there, you can't do this, you can't do that. You get to ask you a question, you can't. And I'm like, that's so weird. Like, I talked to my doctor about what they're doing for the holidays. I've had full conversations with my doctor about their brother who has schizophrenia and things that they think they're going on. And, or like, I'm like, it's people. So when we come from an African-American cultural lens, a lot of the thoughts about ethics and connectivity, we don't base it on European oppressive system. So you can eat with me in session, you can talk to me, you can ask me a question within reason. Like, you saw me pregnant and now I'm not gonna be like, well, what does answering that question mean to you? My child is fine, thank you for asking. That means you care. Everything isn't, you know, this invested interest in something deeper. You saw me ethically, you saw me on this app, you reached out for my services and you did nothing else. And most people who contact me on the app, I'm like, oh, we have a social media clause. We have a social media conversation. And it's consent, you know, like, oh, I'll never tell anybody. It's just like, I'm never going to tell anybody. This person said this. And for most of those videos, unless it's something hilarious and they tell me, I don't say it. You never hear what they say to me. You only hear what I respond with. And that's the thing. That's how I keep their privacy intact. Now, have there been situations where they'd be like, I really want you to play this out for me? I'm like, girl, in 3 months, when you're healed from this situation, you do not want to go look back on social media at that video. You don't know how you feel, you know? So they were like, oh, okay, that's right. Or I'll take things from training that go deeper, you know? I think the point of doing it on social media, if you're selling something or you have a service, it's important to let people know, I'm going to treat you the same way. When I see you on live, if you come on my live and you're my client now, because we've switched over, I'm not like, hey girl, that was a great session yesterday. So proud of you for work. I never do things like that. So the ethical part about it, you have to treat it like you're in a rural town. What if I had interactions with all of these people? And there was no other place for me to go, no other place for them to go. How do I maintain the most respectful relationship that honors what we have, but still doesn't isolate them from the other resources that I present within my community? And that's how I go. If you see me post that I'm having, like, I have a lot of clients who are sober now. I'm going to be speaking at Mindful Drinking Fest this weekend, and I'm doing a workshop and an immersive experience. They're like, oh, yeah, you could come, you could say hi. Yes, the rule in public is, if you see me and I see you, I'm going to look. I follow your lead. If you say hi, I'm going to say hi. If you say, I'm going to keep moving, you know? If you want to, I've had people in Walmart, McDonald's, the Subway, and I'll be like, yeah. It's the same thing. You have to treat people with the same respect that you would want to be treated, and also understand that APA guidelines and regulations tell me that I have to protect this relationship, and I'm not making them or telling them to solicit anything for me. So I am myself. We acknowledge each other and we move on. That's the biggest thing, because it can get really tricky. You know, oh, they're seeing videos about your family, about this, about that. you have a conversation about, some clients will be like, oh, I blocked you, not because I did anything wrong, but because they now are like, I want to be your friend, and I don't, this isn't a friend relationship, but you make me feel so comfortable, so I blocked it. I have other clients that be like, oh yeah, I remember I was sick for 2 weeks and I couldn't talk to you, so I listened to your podcast episode and I went to your whatever to get like, to really get me back in the motivated game and to get some coping skills and to come back in. That's great. So, but having a conversation about the parameters of the relationship and also not wanting anything, that's the biggest thing. I've never told a client, repost anything, tell anything. I don't even ask for referrals. I've never, you know. So I think the biggest thing is maintaining your ethical compass based on your guidelines, and just remember that people want privacy. As much as we love to know what's going on in everybody else's life, we want some element of privacy. We want something to be ours. And that's what therapy is. That's yours. It's not hard to be a decent human. I think that's the piece of social media that misses, the piece of humanity is missing, especially over the last 4 or 5 years, is be decent human and let that guide your ethical compass, your moral compass. And that's all I have. My word and how I appear, those work together. And those are all, my trajectory is all powered by my moral compass, my ethical compass, and do no harm. Because I'm a Black content creator, the amount of stuff that people say to me to try to get me out of pocket on these places or try to see if they can push me to do something that's unethical is wild. So I'm not, I work too hard to allow someone or allow an unethical moment in this big old platform to take everything that I worked hard for. And then that does a disservice to my work. And it also does a disservice to the people, the community at large that I'm trying to connect with. Because if I'm not here, there's going to be another person that tells you autism plus schizophrenia equals bipolar, like it's math. And you're going to have you telling you, don't take your meds, take this, take ashwagandha and do this, and not tell you that ashwagandha can be contraindicated with your ADHD meds. Like all of these things. So I just try to keep it as clear cut. And if I'm the queen of quitting something or the queen of stopping something, if ethically it doesn't align. I've left two huge contracts this year that took a chunk out of my income because what they were doing was no longer ethical and it was going to hurt a larger community. So did that hurt me? Really, like really, really financially? Yeah, but there's nothing in this world that's going to have me sacrifice my ethics or my morals for a check or for followers. It's impact. Impact is what I look for. That my presence has allowed me to be at the APA conference and my work and other things I've had to do or work with other college campuses and be able to connect them with mental health services.
So you know how, so in my head, I think of mental health influencer, you know, large following people in two categories, basically clinicians and non-clinicians. I feel like there is a lot of mental health content out there driven by people who don't have any training in the field. What do you make of that? Like ethically, I guess.
There's nothing wrong with someone who wants to share how they're share their journey, period. I always tell people that it's nothing wrong with wanting to share your journey because there's someone out there that you have a lot of similarities, or they're just trying to hear a voice that sounds familiar, sounds like theirs. I think that's the thing. When you don't have credentials or degree aligned with certain things, a lot of people in the general public feel like they don't have an ethical, they don't have to maintain any type of ethics because they're just governed by themselves. And I think we need anecdotal, we definitely need anecdotal social media so people can feel like, oh yeah, I'm trying to figure it out. And I didn't have the cheat code. Me going to school for umpteen million years is a cheat code, you know? So I don't have the cheat code. I follow mental health accounts that are not clinicians because it is, I stem too, and you're talking about your stemming and you're helping people understand that, or your children are neurodivergent and you're neurodivergent and you're trying to figure it out, or you're just funny as hell and your symptoms. There's an account. I want everybody to follow this. I'm gonna find it. I promise. I've scrolled on him on an accident. He's a guy, he's in recovery, but he's also has bipolar one, and he tells stories about his drug-filled manic episodes. And it is just the wildest thing. But from being a clinician and from having the experience I have, I'm like, you are telling the whole truth. This is wild. I need you here, because people don't understand how drug addiction and substance abuse and your and bipolar and manic episodes and depressive episodes really can create chaos if they're not medicated. And you are needed. Is it funny? But you're also creating this conversation in the comments, like, and how long was this? And this is this. And how long you been sober? And this. And how? Why would you do this? I need you. You have no ethical obligation. You're just getting your story out there. I need people like Dr. Raquel Martin. I love her. She's like, we're connected in real life too. They're going to tell you, no, I have 15. I forgot how many degrees she got. I got like 15 degrees. And this is the research that I've done. I'm funny, but I'm going to tell you why you're wrong. We need it. I think it's a problem. The problem we have is when we see someone do something well, we want to mimic what they have done. And we have to remember, that's the part of not being a clinician or not being a scientist, not understanding that there are individual differences. So we need both, but we also need more people to have conversations where they're like, well, this worked for me, instead of, guess what I did to make my autism go away? No, you didn't. You didn't make your autism go away. You learned more strategies and gained more resources to maintain and stabilize most of your distressing symptoms. That's different than you telling people my shit's gone away. And I think we as clinicians, we clarifying that, let them do what they do, because that's what they're going to do. But let's be here to clarify. And let's also, I try to get people as much as possible. I'm like, be careful. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. So there's a difference from saying, yeah, this is the stuff, I'm self-diagnosed. Ooh, self-diagnosis is needed in some places. Everybody doesn't have money for insurance. Everybody doesn't have, you know, you don't have money to get back and forth to school. How are you going to have money for a therapist? How are you going to have money for an assessment, not alone a session? So there's a place for that, but also explaining why. I'm self-diagnosed because I also have this, this, and this, and my insurance is high as hell. My copay, I can't afford it, but I've been researching and looking at all of these things, and I'm hoping to look into this. I'm self-diagnosed because I'm terrified to go to therapy. I'm terrified to talk to people based on this history that I have. However, I know something isn't quite right, but I just can't put my finger on it. And when I did it by myself, these things made sense. It's all about transparency again. You know, the more transparent we are about our process or what we're doing this for, the easier it is for people to understand what content they want to consume and what content they want to consume cautiously.
Is there anything else like that we didn't get to that you're like, okay, when I think about the ethics of social media use as therapists, this is what I would tell another therapist if they ask me, they need to know this.
My biggest thing is staying clear of interacting with people, especially people who do like lives or a lot of interactive comments on their videos. Staying away from people who are trying to get you to diagnose them. People will like, that will put you in the bag, because now they're taking your word as bond, because you are the person that has the education. You're the person that has all these letters. And there are so many times that people will be in your DMs and they'll say the most heart-wrenching things, but you don't know this person. I've never met this person. This person, the biggest thing I say, these are your followers or people who are engaging with you. These are not your clients. I always joke about, I'm like, you always want to say that you wish that you were, I was your therapist. I can't be everybody's therapist. And I may do a video like, but if I was, and we do humorous content like that, but stay away from that. That's what gets people in trouble. I always tell people about Dr. K, who's still on Twitch and every other platform. I had another clinician friend who posted something he said, and they were like, a clock is wrong twice. They was like, no. I was like, I don't like them. And they were like, well, a clock is right twice a day. And I was like, a broken clock is right twice a day. I'm saying, he's wrong all the time. Because of him being unethical, a young man took his life because of the things that he did on his life. Because he was treating his lives like they were therapy sessions with thousands of people watching. And you basically told this young man who told you he was clinically, chronically, severely depressed, that he was unhappy with himself because of X, Y, and Z, and he didn't love himself, and da-da-da-da-da, and he killed himself a week later. Like, we can't do things like that. I don't go live with people because people will try to push you to have a therapy session in that live space. And I say, one, unethical as hell. Would you want to have a therapy session on a stage? You looked at that number, and it said 80K by my name. On the fun fact that all 80,000 people had nothing to do with this time, would you want 80,000 people to be privy to your thoughts, your beliefs, and things that you were really hiding from other people, but you felt comfortable to come to me with? And I don't know where you are, and I don't know what you're going to do after this. I don't have access to you. And also, you don't have access to me. We're not clients. We're not client and therapists. So, you know, being really clear to with people about what your boundaries are, what you're not going to do, that this is not a diagnostic tool, that I am not going to diagnose you on camera or on a post, and that this information is for educational and mental health resource information. That's the biggest thing. I'm like, this is information that is supposed to be used for educational and resource purposes. You know, this is not for you to go home and be like, I do that too. I have ADHD. I do that too. I have CPTSD. No, that's where I find a lot of clinicians get caught up in, because they want to kind of flex their skill for the class. And it's not a party trick. There are other ways that we can have psychoeducational discussions, which I do on lives, that don't involve, like, somebody will go, my sister does this. And they're like, yeah, my girl does this. I was like, okay, let's talk about gaslighting. Let's talk about, you know, intrusive personalities. Let's talk about those people in our circle who aren't receptive to our boundaries and what that means. I'm not sitting here talking to you about how your sister's an asshole. She is, but we're not going to do that for 40 minutes in front of hundreds of people. So it's that. And also, I think I tell people, be honest with yourself. This is a job. Content creation is a job. I had one of my partner, my former heads of one of the partnerships that I work with, told me, she was like, you're not an influencer. You're an expert with the power of influence. And I took that very seriously. And I think that's what we have to remember as clinicians. I'm an expert with the power of influence. So that being said, how do you want to be perceived, and how do you want to use your power? Do you want to use this as a marketing platform? Do you want to just use this as psychoeducational? Do you hate being in front of the camera, but you like posting infographics, and you love creating coursework? Promote things like that. Don't be someone you're not just because you feel like this will help you get more clients or help you appeal to a greater audience. That's not who you are, and it's not sustainable.
I think it's important to wrap up by acknowledging what Ashley mentioned at the end of the piece here about promotion of products and services. It's one of the most central things that gets brought up around the ethics of social media influencers. Transparency and honesty through very clear disclosures about paid partnerships is a big deal. Without it, it's easy for others to wonder what's real, what's exaggerated or downright false. And it's also important to disclose education and training, or I guess in my opinion, more importantly, lack thereof. Because as I mentioned before, not every mental health influencer understands mental health in the nuanced way we do as therapists. And I think we can all agree the battle for accurate information is real. It can be a struggle. And this is too important of a topic to be clouded by faulty information, potentially driven by likes. So let's all band together to advocate against that in any way we can.